Bruises on the knee, up before the sun, still you gotta bleed. Tired little town, hot dust in your throat. You learn how to run, then you learn to float. Every eye's a test, every turn is a gate. Every night on the line, a chance to be great. No sleep, no grace, still you show your face. One more round, one more climb, one more shot tonight. Motel walls, ice bank on the neck. You lace up again, and you never check. One bad landing, one crowd that turns. Still you keep your pulse, still you let it burn. No sleep, no grace, still you show your face. One more round, one more climb, one more shot tonight.
Live radio, live TV, live video. You got to love it.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for hanging out with us. And welcome to the Vegas Bad Boys podcast special as we recap and rant on AEW Double or Nothing 2026. I am Sin City Steve. And as always, I'm being joined by Red Jed. Red Jed, how in the hell are you, my brother?
I gotta say, brother, I think I am still buzzing from this motherfucking show, Double or Nothing 2026, celebrating the seventh year anniversary as we go into year seven for AEW on this show. This is basically kind of like an anniversary AEW show, when you think about it. I think it's official, folks. AEW has survived the seven-year itch.
Yeah.
And here they are on their seventh year anniversary, killing it with maybe arguably one of the best pay-per-views that they have ever done, bar none.
Yeah. And you know, I was having a lot of conversations with people today, and a couple of people that had never watched AEW, and at my kind of prodding, they did get the pay-per-view last night. And they were completely blown away. Lifelong WWE fans. One guy in particular was completely baffled. During the show, he blew up my phone numerous times. It was actually pretty fun. So there's a lot of buzz surrounding AEW coming out of this event. This was a statement show. This was a landmark show for AEW. And it, dude, from the top to the bottom, they brought it. Every single talent that walked out into that arena brought everything that they had, and they all killed it, man. So good. So good.
Yeah. It was a special night all the way.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, man. And you know what? Let's just dive right in, because even though the pay-per-view was only 4 hours and change, as opposed to us being used to longer AEW shows, let's not make this recap 4 hours. And, let's just be mindful and, tell you guys, if you didn't catch the show, why you should go back and watch it. So let's start with the buy-in, which was their pre-show, in case you're new to AEW. So obviously on this buy-in, on this pre-show, you had the Death Riders and the Ops, which was a solid trios match.
Yeah.
But then also the Divine Dominion, to no surprise, defeating Zeta Steel and Viva Van in less than 5 minutes. to the tune of 4 minutes, 45 seconds.
Yeah.
What kind of input or thoughts did you have on those first two matches?
I thought the ops match with the Death Riders was kind of par for the course. It was fine. It felt a lot like what we'd see maybe on a Collision or a Dynamite, which is fine. I thought the Divine Dominion match was a little better than what we're used to from these squash matches. They went the distance almost, pretty darn close. So I thought Zeta Steel looked pretty good. She has really good presence, and Viva Van, man, she's getting her opportunities. So that's awesome as well to see that.
Hell yeah, man. I'm super happy for both Zeta and Viva because, you know, Viva has been signed to AEW for a couple of years now.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously very largely competing in Ring of Honor and doing some enhancement work on the main roster. But it's good to see that, you know, she was involved in this match. You know, Zeta getting the double choke slam at the end of the 5 minutes there. It solid stuff by the champions, man. Lena Cross and Megan Bain are just, they're crushing it right now, man. They're absolutely killing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can't see a tech team on the horizon. AEW is going to have to get creative. I think moving forward, because I just don't know who they're going to pair off to finally get the belts off these girls. It's going to be a while, I think.
I'll tell you, man, I would not be surprised in the slightest if the Brawling Birds are the ones to take those titles at Wembley.
There you go. Oh, that would totally make sense. Yeah. Being in London. Absolutely.
Hayter and Windsor winning those titles in London. It writes itself.
Sure does. Love it.
But you can keep the Divine Dominion, keep them like a freaking unstoppable force. No pun intended. I think that legitimately they can run roughshod on the division and run into a bit of a speed bump in the Brawling Birds and lose those titles.
There you go. I love it.
So, book it, absolutely. Daniel. What's up?
I said, book it, Daniel.
Hell yeah, man. And then, you know, elsewhere on the pre-show, we had the 10-man tag. We had our party match in the pre-show as Boom and Doom and the Conglomeration with the Rizzler and Big Justice taking on Shane Taylor Promotions. Let's just be real on this. This was just a giant ad for Vita Coco coconut water.
Yeah, pretty much from start to finish. I was the focus of the match. And, you know, it was fun. It was a party match, like you said, all the way.
Absolutely.
Just boom, ba-da, boom, ba-da, boom, 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 boom. Here we go. And cut. That's it.
It was fun, though. That's the key thing. Yep, the one thing that I have to hand it to them, you know, I did see some discourse online about them heavily promoting a product on their show. But the fact is, this was done on the pre-show. Absolutely. So they didn't trot out the Vita Coco guy during the actual main pay-per-view.
Right.
Now, obviously, they had the LED boards and the turnbuckles and all that kind of stuff sponsored, which at this stage of the game, they would be dumb to not do that stuff.
No kidding.
But please don't cover the AEW mat in advertisements. That's all I can ask.
Exactly. Let's keep it minimal. I can handle how they have it now, and I can certainly handle a pay-per-view without any commercials.
Yeah, no shit.
So there you go.
I completely agree. Yeah. And, you know, elsewhere on the pre-show, we did get Mick got his graphic. You know, sure Mick Foley is all elite. You got to love to see it, man. And call it whatever you will, dude. Mick was out there, and in the pre-show, they had him mixing it up with MJF and Darby Allin, the two guys involved in the main event of the show. And Jed, I'm not gonna lie to you. When I saw MJF out there, I was completely surprised that he sullied himself to appear on the buy-in or the pre-show. Right. But it was great because you actually did get Mick breaking character and telling MJF to just calm down, let him enjoy the moment for just a second, and then he dove right back into character, which was a really cool moment to see. And then obviously Mick giving the heartfelt speech to Darby Allin after Darby ran off MJF, after MJF kicked Mick in the nuts. Yeah, great ending to the pre-show for sure.
Yeah, this was a fantastic segment, which was pay-per-view worthy. I mean, you have Foley out there selling the whole situation, cutting promos as only he can do with passion and purpose. And, you know, a little nod to like maybe something down the road with him and Darby. And most certainly we're, I don't know where exactly they're going to go with this, but Foley and MJF have something going on down the road. I don't know if Foley is going to actually have a match down the road. I know there's been some online discourse on that too. If that's going to happen, or if he's going to go out one more time on his terms kind of situation. I guess time will tell with that, but I could most certainly see Foley mentoring somebody against MJF. And like I said, he is like him and Darby Allin are like peanut butter and jelly. They're from the same kiln, the same ilk, you know, the same gimmick, essentially, you know, putting their bodies on the line. And God, Darby is taking it to a whole other level than Foley even went. So,
oh my God. Said about that. Yeah, we'll definitely talk about that as we recap the main event. But turning over now to the main show, and you know, props to the graphics team with AEW. They always do a really good job with these themed posters. So good, so good. Excellent. But let's go ahead and let's start off by talking about the AEW World Tag Team Championship I Quit match. Whew. And the stipulation in this one: if Cage and Cope didn't win this match, they could never team again. Right. Damn, dude. These four guys let it all hang out. We got plenty of stuff to talk about in this match, and it was the opening fucking match.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, whoever helped them lay this match out, it may have just been these guys alone. I don't know. I mean, we have a lot of agents in AEW, like Jerry Lynn and et cetera, Colt Cabana and whatnot, that do great work in a lot of these matches as well. But particularly whoever laid out the spots for this match and the flow and the crescendo of this match, holy Toledo, fucking five stars to you folks who did this. But this was by far the best tag match I've seen all year. This is a match of the year contender in my mind. I thought the story that was being told in this, when you think about the entire program and the entire feud that these guys have had with Copeland and Cage and FTR, boy, it just checkmarked everything off that you wanted to see in a blow off, that you wanted to see in a match like this. I don't think the program's blown off by any means. We got more to go.
Oh yeah.
But this chapter was wow. What a way to tell the story. With Beth Phoenix out there, the flaming table spot.
Oh, bro.
Oh, my Lanta.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
You gotta love that, man. Ah!
Yeah, that too. Holy fuck. Luna Vachon personified in Beth Phoenix. Wow.
Dude, Beth looked great. I love it. I loved everything that they did in this match. Yeah. I did find it very interesting that they chose this night to be the night that they paid homage to the Edge and Mick Foley WrestleMania flaming table spot with Mick Foley in his first night in the company and obviously Copeland in the opening match. So it was great. But dude, this thing came down to Spike.
Spike right
on the top of Dax's head, bro. Christian had him locked in a Scorpion Deathlock.
Yeah. I mean, interesting as the reports have been too, and we have heard about this already. You know, there was no blood on this show. No intentional blood. We should
exactly
say.
That's the key phrase: intentional blood.
Right, and this would be a match that normally you would see that.
Yeah,
you would see a lot of blood in this match, but
if they would have been virtually anywhere in the U.S. other than New York State, we would have seen a bloodbath. I'm sure,
no question. And I have to make note as well of that pile driver spot on the table to Copeland. My God, that looked really stiff.
Yes,
his fucking vertebrae must be tingling a bit today after that. And he came back. He was looking a little lumpy from the spot, too.
Oh, yeah.
Cuts and abrasions abound. Wow. Just, and you know, even like at the finish of this match, I guess I got a little, I wouldn't call it like I broke down and cried or anything, but it got me in the Googles a little bit to see Edge and Christian, you know, back in the day, full circle here in AEW now as Christian and Cope. Getting the titles, one last ride for these guys, it was something special. It really felt like a big moment, a big win. I think Edge or Copeland looked very emotionally taken back by everything, yeah, too, as was Beth Phoenix for sure. And then Christian, of course, always kind of no-sells everything, but you could see he was even feeling it a little bit as well.
He was definitely feeling it. And, you know, you mentioned the crowd. Dude, this crowd was fucking rabid from the very beginning when, you know, when Cope's music hits and they're singing along with his song.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, unbelievable singing performance by this crowd on that one as well.
Yeah, one of the, and this is not hyperbole when I say this, I think this was one of the best AEW crowds ever. And that covers a lot of ground. You and I were at the first Double or Nothing in Vegas. Great crowd there. Other years here in Vegas with the Double or Nothing concept coming into town. Great crowds. I've been, and you've been to many AEW shows in Chicago. Great crowds, unquestionably. But this was a whole other level of a, from start to finish. This crowd did not die out, did not calm down. They were engaged 110% throughout this fucking show.
Absolutely, man. Yeah, this was one of those nights where the crowd was an active participant in every match, which was fantastic.
Yeah. And the way they filmed the crowd, once again, kudos to the production team on that. Filming the intimacy of the crowd and the reactions of the crowd, like you were right there in the arena. That's something they really step up on in pay-per-views, I've noticed.
Oh, yeah. The cinematography was off the charts. Some of the camera shots and angles that they were using were just so good. And I was able to get a couple of the images, and we'll show those here in a bit. But, dude, the cinematography across the board was unbelievable. Unbelievable. So, excellent job by everybody, not just your – not just your talent on screen, but your production team, to the agents that, you know, helped to plan out the matches and, you know, the show flow and the format. Just everybody executed. And that was just one of those nights when everything went right.
For sure. It was the definition of true synergy from every aspect of the company.
Absolutely.
High level commentary to the in-ring, to the production, to the layout. Everything flowed well. There was no snafus in production. It just was seamless and job well done.
Absolutely. And, you know, speaking of perfect synergy, we got our international championship match in the two slot. Kazuchika Okada defending his AEW International Championship against Konosuke Takeshita. And, dude, we have a new AEW International Champion after a 5-star instant classic in Konosuke Takeshita. Oh, man. Hit him with the raging fire. Boom.
I tell you.
Clean as a sheet in the middle of the fucking ring.
Clean as a sheet. No bullshit from Callis, even though he was out there, but he generally just let it go and let these guys do their thing. And there was not, I thought for sure, and I'm glad it didn't happen, but I thought there was going to be run-in from Don Callis members and Callis himself, and it didn't happen. So I was grateful for that. What we got here was the match we have waited for months for. We were kind of always, we knew it, we get it. We just, it was a question of when, but I think, I don't know about you, but I mean, even my high expectations for these guys from World's End, from that match and the subsequent build from there, a lot of hype. I had a lot of expectations. They were very high, but it actually overexceeded it for sure in this.
I would agree. And, you know, it, you hit the nail on the head. I came into this match with a lot of expectations. This was my match that I really wanted to see. Yep. And the match that I viewed as being the dark horse, the match that was going to steal the show.
Yeah.
And sure enough, it did. But it even exceeded my expectations. Mm-hmm. Dude, Takeshita is so fucking good. He had an amazing 2025, and he's continuing that into 2026. If you look at his body of work so far this year, is fantastic.
Quite excellent stuff.
Resume.
Yeah, quite a resume just this year alone, what he's done. And this was classic Okada as well. We haven't seen a match like this from Okada yet in AEW. I think this was his shining moment. Both guys, I mean, it really truly was. And both guys have done a nice resume of work in AEW, but this was like, we're at peak right now, and boy, these guys brought it. One of the, I don't know what, how you felt, but I think this was probably my favorite match of the night.
This was my match of the night for sure.
Yeah. But I mean, it was close. I mean,
yes.
between the I Quit match, this match, and then the last two matches on the card, that you could line them up, and you know, you could blind pick. They're all fucking top notch. This one was just maybe like a quarter of a star higher than the other ones. Yeah.
And you know, if it would have been in the Tokyo Dome, it would have gotten 7 stars. But that's beside the point.
No question about it. And hey, you never know. We may.
Hey, it still might get 7 stars. Who fucking knows? Right.
Now we're 1-1, so there may be still another one to come.
We'll get that rubber match for sure.
Maybe next month already. I don't know. We'll see where they go.
You never know. Maybe Redemption. Yeah. We'll see what happens. But, you know, you mentioned no run-ins during the match. Well, we didn't get any during the match because we got some shit after the match as the return of Kyle Fletcher, as he shows up and kind of chases off the Don Callis family who had descended upon Takeshita and clears them out of the ring. Any pro wrestling fan who's been watching for any amount of time could see where this was coming and see where this was going.
Yep.
As Fletcher hands him the belt, raises his hand, and then gives him a nice little clothesline right to the freaking face, dude. Yep. I do wish that he would have gotten more impact on the clothesline, though.
True. Yeah.
If I'm gonna split hairs and I'm gonna nitpick, that would be the one thing. He hit him, but Takeshita went down and he sold it like as if he got hit by a damn truck.
No shit, right?
Or a bus, like what we saw later in the show.
Yeah. The reaction didn't match up the execution a little bit in that one, but I have to say, man, when Fletcher came out, the crowd lost their mind.
He was completely fucking over with this crowd, man.
Yeah, he was, to the point where I kind of even like second guessed the turn. I'm like, gotcha, they have turned him. He was so fucking in the middle of this madness here, and he was so over that I've kind of felt like, should he stay with Takeshita and feud with the Don Callis family? That's going to obviously happen down the road.
That's definitely going to happen.
Yeah, but so they're slowly getting into that. But you can just see, I guess, where the future holds with this based on that reaction.
Yep.
Fans wanted him on Takeshita's side. They wanted him as a baby face. And they'll get it eventually, but it's a process. So
absolutely is. Yeah. You know, and the thing that I'll mention, too, is that, you know, Fletcher now, you saw at the end of the match where, you know, he and Okada both reached for the international championship and Okada kind of acquiesced to Fletcher. So realistically, what that tells me is Okada is going after another championship because we got a big show coming up in Wembley in August.
Yep.
Takeshita versus Fletcher for the international championship sounds amazing at that show.
It sure does. Yeah, you can see the seeds from this event were planted a lot for All In. And that's one of them. Yeah, we're definitely going to see that. I think there is no question about it that's coming up for All In.
Yeah, most definitely.
Yep.
And, you know, after the match, we did get Emo Takeshita in the locker room area there.
Yeah. I'm looking forward
looking to down at his international championship. Happy that he won, but sad that he lost a friend.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to this run though. I mean, it's his time now. He is fully turned. He is away from the Don Callis family. They have attacked him. It's on. And Takeshita, the sky is the fucking limit with this guy.
It is own like neck bone.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of another match that was hard hitting, I love the psychology in this match too.
Yeah.
You had Mina working over Athena's knee, and there was a bit of a botchy type of a spot. Mm-hmm. And you know, looking at it in hindsight, it realistically was almost designed to look that bad. Because you know, after that spot where Athena was up on Mina's shoulders in a bit of an electric chair and got spun around, and Athena hits the mat and her knee gets tweaked. But then they continued to work over the knee. That became the focal point of the match. Mina has been using the figure four leg lock since she's been in AEW. Yep. So it made sense. They even told the story that Athena couldn't go all the way to the top rope for the O face initially, couldn't keep her balance because of her knee. Mm-hmm. So great stuff there. In the end, Athena does persevere and climbs up to the top, hits the O face 1-2-3, and advances into the second round of the Owen Hart tournament.
Right. Yeah, and decent match. Very, very hard to fall back from
those
other two matches. I mean, my God.
Those two women were put in the most unenviable spot of anyone on this show.
For sure. Yeah, normally that would be maybe like a spot later on the card to stuck in that spot this early. It is what it is, but thought it was fine. I kind of feel like this might be Athena's year for this tournament.
I hope so, man.
Right, I think she's.
But, you know, there is that wild card on the other side of the bracket.
Right, where are they going to go?
Know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder. Because from the other side, I kind of figured Willow was going to be that person at the end with one more match against Athena. They've had a nice run of matches in the past,
yep.
And I thought that would make perfect sense for the final with Athena maybe going over Willow and getting that spot. Now we'll see what happens. I think the wild card spot could be particularly a big name. I'm wondering about Mercedes. Yep. Yep. Money, money, money.
Yep.
And then Mercedes and Athena in the final.
Yep.
Yeah. Why not?
You're let's reading go. My mind. I love it.
Yeah. Let's go.
Oh yeah.
Yep.
Absolutely, man. And you know, that was like what we said, that was a very solid match, but dude, I gotta say, John Moxley and Kyle O'Reilly for the Continental Championship. These guys went out there and put on a technical masterpiece.
Absolutely.
And realistically, you shouldn't expect anything different from either one of these guys.
Right.
But they went out there and they delivered. And again, it just shows you the variety that you're going to get from AEW. You know, match one, you had a crazy weapons match. In match two, you had a great professional wrestling match.
Mm-hmm.
Up next after that, you had a very solid women's match. Here you had a technical masterpiece.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it shows you that, yes, pro wrestling, when it's done right, is a work of art.
It sure is. Yeah. And like you said, this is a different style that was presented particularly in this form. I know Tony Khan was talking about a little bit about the style shifts on their big shows when he was talking about also the Ring of Honor pay-per-view, where there was like two or three pure wrestling matches, which reminded me of something like this. Only this was at a higher level, even of those matches. This was great. These guys work fantastic together. The full gear match was great. This was just as good. The Dynamite match on Wednesday to build this was excellent. I think even though Kyle O'Reilly didn't get the win here, his stock is continuing to rise and will continue to be at a different level than he was before he came into this feud. So I think that was the whole intention.
Absolutely. And, you know, after the match, after Moxley did get the tap out victory, which the ending sequence was awesome. I loved how each guy had, you know, the leg submission locked in on one another. And it was because Kyle O'Reilly went for the pinfall that ultimately he lost the match. I think that that's something that can't go understated.
Yeah.
Again, really, they're telling stories and they're the finishes to the matches. They make sense. Psychology is actually a thing if you watch the fucking product.
Right. Yep. It told the story, even played into their other matches a lot. There was a lot of throwbacks to those other matches. Oh, so yes. Moxley showed great vulnerability in this match. What else can you say? The guy really did a fantastic job of making O'Reilly look legitimate. And to follow up as well, yeah, he got the win, but O'Reilly dominated this program. He really did. So, and that's what I take from it more than anything.
Absolutely. And, you know, Kyle O'Reilly definitely improved his stock by losing this match, which is rare. But, I'll tell you, another very solid match that followed this one up was Will Ospreay and Samoa Joe in tournament quarterfinals of the Owen Hart tournament. And, dude, this one got off and running real quick. Much so that Ospreay hits the Os Cutter while Joe's opening pyro is still going off. Unfucking real, dude. And from then on, it was just a sprint to the finish. It was fun to watch these guys do what they do best.
Yeah. This reminded me a lot of, there was so many in the past at TNA of AJ, well, even in WWE, AJ Styles and Samoa Joe. Yeah. This had that same feel to it. Ospreay was definitely pulling pride from those matches. I know he had a history of, I remember him talking a lot about the Christopher Daniels, AJ Styles, Samoa Joe match, which basically got him interested in being a wrestler, period. So there was some nods to that in this match, it felt like. And just, it was a very hard, stiff match, too. These guys were throwing down, no question about it. Felt like an elevated. This did not feel like a Dynamite match. This felt like it needed to be on a card like this. While it maybe was a couple notches below some of these other matches earlier in the card, not by much. Not by much. It was still well over 4 stars to me. I would probably go like a 4.25 on this one. It was still fucking great.
I definitely agree, you know, and the thing is, obviously they've been hyping up Ospreay getting these submission victories, and they even made allusion to the fact on Dynamite that his new finisher was named Death Ground, but he picks up the win, not with a submission here, but with a pinfall victory via Hidden Blade. So again, they do protect Joe a bit in that they didn't make him tap out to a new submissions expert, but very solid stuff right there in that one. But the Owen Hart tournament continued, bro, as we had Swerve Strickland and Bandido in the in another quarterfinal match. But you know what, I loved Swerve's entrance gear.
Yes,
loved it, man. He rocking the Beat It, and paying homage to the man himself. Yeah. Michael Jackson, you gotta love it, bro.
Yeah, that was very cool. Very cool. Some of these entrances, some of these homages on this show felt really like at a different level of like a WrestleMania style entrance, you know, in some ways and things like that. So it really was cool. Added touch to some of these bouts.
They really did. And there was a couple of them that really were set apart. One toward the end of the show that we'll talk about in a bit, but dude, let us, I know we've talked about entrances and ring gear and stuff like that, but let us not take the shine off of this match, because this match was hard hitting. This match featured some spots that I have never seen before in my life.
Me too.
Such as that house call kick from the shoulders of Bandido. What the fuck, dude?
Oh, wow. I was left speechless by that. I just did not expect that to happen. And all of a sudden here we are, and the dude is on top of Bandito's shoulders and fucking bow.
Yeah.
I was stunned. And then soon after, the Poison Rana to the floor.
To the fucking floor.
Whoa, buddy.
Wow.
So
much room for error there, but thankfully nothing went wrong.
Right, thankfully. But no, physical as it gets, these guys mesh very well. I'd love to see a rematch with these guys down the road.
We definitely will, man. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah, this was quality all around. Again, pay-per-view level quality. Opening round of the Owen between this one and the Ospreay match with Joe, we are off to a massive bang with the Owen Hart tournament for the men, undoubtedly. I liked this one just a titch better than the Ospreay and Joe match. I would probably go 4.5 on this one compared to Joe and Ospreay at 4.25. But tit for tat, I mean, both fantastic matches. This one just had a little bit more creativity and a little more, like you said, stuff we have never seen before. May never see again either. So,
yeah, exactly, dude. That's awesome, man. Both of those Owen Hart tournament matches on the men's side have been fantastic. So you know what that means. The other two matches in the quarterfinals, they got to live up to their end of the bargain now.
They sure do. And I kind of feel like, you know, looking ahead at the layout of the tournament too, we very well may see Ospreay and Swerve in the finals.
Yes. Yep.
I think that's very possible. And if so, bring it on. I'd love to see it.
I would love to see that one for sure. Yep. And, you know, let's shift gears here and let's talk about the women's four-way match for the AEW Women's World Championship, the Toxic Spider Tekla defending against Hikaru Shida, Chris Statlander, and Jamie Hayter. And, you know, they planted the seeds for this one and how it was going to go for quite a while. Obviously, Shida and Statlander, they could not coexist. And clearly, it was every woman for themselves and every other trope of professional wrestling coexistence that you want to use. We knew this was going to happen. They were going to cost each other the match. Yeah. So it was going to come down to Tekla and Jamie Hayter, and no real surprise, Tekla retains, largely because you got to figure those brawling birds, they're going to be challenging for those women's tag team championships. So Hayter, while it would have been cool to see her get the win here, they did the right thing by keeping that championship on Tekla, as she will end up defending at Wembley Stadium for sure.
Oh, yeah. I think she's going to keep it till Wembley. Now, the question is, will she lose it at Wembley? Very possible. We'll see where it lines up for the Owen Hart tournament and who ends up winning on there. I think either way you go, like we were talking about, maybe Mercedes or Athena. I think either way, it's very possible there's a title switch there. Just a question of what direction they'll take. But yeah, this was kind of a sprint of a match a little bit.
Yeah.
It was go, go, go. Everybody knew their spots. Everybody was dipping in and out from sequence to sequence. A lot, like you said, a lot of stuff between Hikaru Shida and Chris Statlander, which finally came to a head. We very well are definitely not going to be seeing those guys as a team again.
No, not at all.
That's done and over with. So, onward to a feud with those two. I think Sheeta's going full heel, more than likely, as we're witnessing in that storyline. So, yeah, everything kind of lines up now. The only question is, where do we go from here for the interim with Tekla coming up for Forbidden Door? I would think there's going to be something with a Stardom talent.
You think?
For Forbidden Door with the president, if you recall that storyline as well.
Haro Okada.
I would guess he is bringing in somebody from the Stardom side to, or maybe more than one on the Stardom side, maybe to take out Tekla. Maybe we'd have a triple threat, four-way. Who knows? Hard to tell, but I would think that's probably where we're going with Tekla next.
Yeah, man. So, I mean, realistically, I know that she's in the Owen Hart tournament, but if Persephone doesn't make it out of that first round, then I could see her being the CMLL advertised talent if they did choose to do an AEW versus Stardom versus CMLL match.
Right.
Let your mind wander on who could be from Stardom. because there are some interesting names, and that timeline is pretty interesting because let's see here. I think that we're butting up against a certain 90-day no-compete clause.
Oh, no kidding, right, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh, interesting.
Uh-huh.
Somebody Calgary, perhaps, yeah?
That would make the most sense. But yeah, I would love to see Kyrie come over as part of the Stardom brand.
Yes.
And obviously we've seen how that stuff works when they're featured on the Forbidden Door shows. So yeah,
it could be the
beginnings of things.
I love it. Yeah, that'd be great. And I think Persephone was originally supposed to be in this match as well. So that would line up as well, that she would get that shot down the road when she gets healed. So we'll see where they go with things moving forward. So
most definitely, man. Yep. And up next was, oh man, shit got real. It was the Stadium Stampede.
Wow.
As, 7-on-7, man. You had Jericho, the Hurt Syndicate, and the Elite versus the Demand, the Don Callis family, and the Dogs.
The Dogs.
Man. And, I mentioned earlier the cinematography, the way that this arena looked. This was a really, really cool image that circulated on the internet during Jericho's entrance. It looks phenomenal. And obviously that immediately followed the outstanding video packages both teams, but namely for the babyfaces as it was set to Devil's Dance by Metallica. Yeah. Dope song and dope video to get the stage set. Super cool, man. It was it was very Snatch-esque in presentation.
Yeah, and then on the heel side, it was like a parody of the Warriors movie, if I recall, you know, where they had the different characters coming in different vehicles and stuff like that. So, yeah, that was, and incidentally, that was the only pre-tape of this whole thing. The Young Bucks revealed today that none of the segments they did backstage or anything like that was done pre-taped. These were done as it was happening part of Stadium Stampede. So, I enjoyed this match more than the other Stadium Stampedes as well. I rewatched all the other three prior to the pay-per-view, and I thought this one was by and far well more. I mean, the other ones were creative as fuck. Don't get me wrong, but this one took the cake with the barriers that they had to abide by as well. Once again, no blood and no brawling in the fans, in the stands. Yeah.
Yep, no brawling in the stands. That was, dude, the New York Athletic Commission is absolute sticklers when it comes to any of those violations. So props to Tony and props to everybody on the roster for adhering to those guidelines, because God forbid we sit here and instead of us talking about how this was an amazing show, we're talking about how they went overboard and now they're in trouble with the New York State Athletic.
Right.
So thankfully they played in the sandbox and everything was good. But yeah, man, this match went a little bit over a half hour. But they got a lot accomplished in that half hour. It wasn't just a, you mentioned some of the other Stadium Stampede matches, some of the other Anarchy in the Arena matches. There's a lot of like walk and brawl things that realistically don't do well on second or even third viewings or beyond.
Right.
But I think that the way that they built this match, there will be that replayability and, you know, people will want to go back and check this thing out. Mm-hmm. Initially, I'd say the first 10 minutes to it, I was the complete opposite. I was not a fan of it in the beginning, but then things started picking up. And they started getting more creative with things. And I was like, all right, let's fucking go. Mm-hmm. And then it clicked for me and it was off to the races from there.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause this match had a little bit of a different format than the other ones. Usually the other ones would start in, an empty arena or something like that, outside of the ring, where this started in the ring. So you're kind of like, okay, are they going to stray out?
Exactly.
So I was with you the first 10 minutes too. Like, what's going on here? Why are they not like venturing out?
This is just a 7-on-7 tag match that I could see on fucking Dynamite.
Right.
Legit, yeah. That was my thought for the first few minutes of this match.
Yeah.
But then, you know, things definitely picked up and, you know, obviously, yeah, I've got an image on the screen right now of all the baby faces in the middle of the ring, you know, obviously celebrating after they picked up the win.
Yep.
But yeah, dude, like it took a while to get things started. Shout out to our boy Toa Leona, friend of the show. Dude, I have never seen three people get stacked up on his shoulders. And he walked around the fucking ring with him too.
Oh, I know.
He didn't. He didn't just, you know, get him up there into the position and then immediately take him back. No, he walked around the damn ring with three guys on his shoulders.
Oh, I know. It was nuts. I mean, where do you start with the other spots? I mean, we can talk about the.
We're gonna go into detail. Don't worry.
There's so many. I mean, the nice little nod to Lashley and Leo Rush's history came out of nowhere in this show.
That was fucking awesome.
Segment. Yeah, the tennis racket XL version that was presented to Jericho from
Luther, of all people.
Yep, of Luther, yep. So just like, what the fuck, you know? It was just one surprise after the next. I thought, once again, just like that opening match, that tag match, whoever laid this match out, and it was probably like all of them, more or less.
Oh, yeah.
But damn, you guys did a phenomenal job in this one. And working with those parameters, and man, just so many moments.
What was really cool was they had the split screen going, and Clark Connors was getting into it with the Young Bucks on an escalator, getting both, you know, kicked up the escalator and then kicked down the escalator. But then in the other pane of the split screen, you had Andrade doing his Riz gimmick. And yeah, he rizzed up Luchasaurus.
What the fuck? Yeah,
Jed, I know you'll appreciate this. Tell me that didn't just scream something straight out of Gremlins to you.
Oh yeah, he looked just like a fucking Gremlin, man. He looked like the Gremlin from Gremlins 2, dressed up with the fucking wig and shit, man. It was great. Oh, and what about, man, Mark Davis took a fucking shellacking on this fucking.
Oh my god, dude.
What the hell?
So first he's in the back, he's brawling, you know, in catering, gets into it and takes a bump, supposedly hits his eye on one of the legs of a table.
Seriously.
So he's wearing a fucking bandage around his head for the rest of the match, which thankfully, I guess he's okay. Tony didn't mention anything about it in the scrum. God. But then, dude, this happened. Holy shit. Yeah. So in case you didn't see this particular spot, Mark Davis, after he gets done, you know, brawling around and catering, he stumbles his way out to the parking garage area and stumbles onto a golf cart. And then you hear a really loud, what you think is a train horn, but no, is the horn from the Jurassic Express bus. And then, dude, full steam ahead, Jack Perry just drives this fucking bus through the golf cart into another car, and you had commentary worrying about Mark Davis's life like he just got mangled in a fucking car crash.
Well, it was the way they filmed it. It made you think it did fucking happen. I mean, my God, you know. But yeah, that golf cart got fucking trashed. I mean, you can see it. It's underneath the fucking bus. I mean, it got splattered. Kerb plumped.
Oh, yes.
Oh, what a deal.
Dude, this match had so many cool spots. I mentioned the Young Bucks with Clark Connors super kicking him onto the escalator.
Yeah.
And then them going all the way around and then kicking him down the escalator.
Yep.
Just so good, man.
Yeah,
so good. And it just shows the Young Bucks continue to deliver in these party style matches, these multi-man tag matches.
Right.
You got to wonder though, man, I was thinking, okay, this would make for one hell of a Final Destination type scene for Clark Connors, because he was getting those luscious locks in the escalator. I was kind of worried. I was worried, but thankfully he's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, he avoided it getting caught in the shoehorns of the escalator.
Yes. So,
yeah. That could have been bad.
That could have been very bad.
Yeah, yeah. No, everybody, I think, probably came out of this match unharmed for the most part, other than, of course, like we were just talking about with Kyle Davis, but boy, poor guy.
Oh, dude. Yeah. Unreal. Yeah. Unreal. And so, as mentioned, everybody on the babyface side hits their finish on Ricochet until Jericho is going to hit the Judas effect. Bishop Khan throws him out of the way and then obviously takes the bullet for Ricochet. And, the babyfaces respond and get the win as Team Jericho defeats Team Ricochet. And after the match, in a very, very cool moment, Chris Jericho celebrates and dedicates the match a la Sabu, RIP.
Good stuff.
Great visual as he took the bump through the empty table and pointed to the sky.
Indeed. Very cool. Very cool. Jericho worked his ass off in this match, by the way.
He looked fantastic in this match.
Yeah, he really did. He carried his own and then some in this match. So. Yeah. I'm glad I went back to AEW. Thinking about it now, I kind of think about how things would go for him if you'd have made a different choice at this point.
Yeah.
And he is right in the mix of everything. He's in a good spot in AEW. I like where he's at. I like where he's going.
Yeah, most definitely, man. And from there, it was time for our main event. As it was title versus hair, Darby Allin versus MJF. For the AEW World Championship.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, dude, this match was great. Yeah, these guys have unbelievable chemistry. They've shown it time and time again, not just here in AEW, but on the indies as well. They've worked together so frequently, and it shows. I got to take a minute before we dive into this, pun somewhat intended.
Wow.
Take a look at this shot, man. This is such an amazing image. Thanks. Darby Allin 20 feet up on top of the scaffolding and the lighting rig, which was on the entranceway, and such a cool visual.
It sure is. Wow. Just that. Look at that. I mean, just the whole scape of it. The whole, can you imagine as he's standing up there looking at that? As he knows what's about to come on that spot that he did. Oh,
and speaking of,
then he
jumped from 20 feet up. Picture perfect after giving an homage to Mick Foley himself with the bang bang and jumping off with the, would you say that it was a coffin drop or would you say that it was an attempt at an elbow drop?
I think a little bit of both, maybe.
The most important thing is that he hit his target. The back of his head hit the platform on the top of the stage, which did open him up hard way. And that was they had to kind of act fast from there because, God forbid, again, the New York State Athletic Commission didn't need them showing up and shutting the show down.
Yeah, that could have been just a major catastrophe. I'm thankful that that didn't happen. It very well could have happened. But I think they recognize this was unintentional. It certainly wasn't they weren't like aiming to go for blood in this spot. It definitely added something to the finish of the match.
Yeah.
Because here we are, but Darby was like at his last gallon of tank gas in his tank. The little bit left, that kind of put it over the edge. He couldn't keep the sharpshooter on. It kind of played into that quite a bit, actually. So I thought that was good. And what about that bump that he took out of the ring that he caught his feet on the ropes on?
Unfucking real, dude. That was like 30 seconds into the match, by the way.
No shit. Yeah.
30 seconds into the match, and the dude's damn near killing himself diving outside of the ring.
Unbelievable. I mean, it's just it played very well as well into the whole month. I mean, what yes. he's done, which was incredible. And I even have to admit, going into this match, I think the consensus was that MJF was going to go over here. I think we all kind of expected that based on the crazy schedule Darby was working this month on TV and these matches he had. He was going to go until he could go no longer, and it probably was going to be a short reign, but a memorable one at that. I think this elevated Darby in his own way.
Oh, yeah. He's
solidifying himself as main event status now, and rightfully so. I think with Foley involved now as well, like I said, if he ever mentored him or something like that, I think it would kind of cement that even more.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, it told a story. The story definitely came to a very harsh conclusion for sure, but still, I think all in all, this was a fantastic match.
Yeah.
Once again with these guys, ending with the headlock.
The headlock takeover, brother.
Here we go again. Yeah,
they'll never end that. And people say they don't tell stories.
No shit.
But the fact is, this Darby Allin title reign, I was skeptical of it at first. You know, obviously, I pay attention to the fandoms and the numbers and the segments and stuff like that. Not to mention the people in the crowd with, you know, the half painted faces for Darby.
Yeah.
The kids love him. Like it, there's no doubting any of that. But realistically, I was somewhat apprehensive of taking the title off of MJF until I saw what they were doing with this title run in that you saw from title defense number one, that Darby wasn't going to go out there and just go half-assed. He was going to leave everything that he had on the table and defending the title once or most of the time twice during the week.
Yeah.
Dude had, what, 9 defenses of the championship? 8 or 9 defenses?
Yeah.
I mean, there are some people that hold a championship for a year that don't defend it 9 times.
Right, right.
Let's be totally real about that.
Yeah.
And this guy did it in a little over a month.
Yeah. And every match was memorable as hell.
Yes, there wasn't a bad match.
Not at all.
The Sammy Guevara match was the only one that was eh.
Yeah.
But even that was still very good.
He sure was, yeah. Yeah, so that's why I'm saying, like, he really cemented himself with this run. It was a short run, but it was a meaningful run, probably more meaningful than we see out of world championship reigns in general. So awesome run. He deserves a break at this point. I would think we're probably going to get a break for him at least for 2 months, maybe going even into like All In based off of the results of the aftermatch.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we dive into the aftermatch, I do want to make mention of something. We talked about entrance gear and ring gear and stuff like that. You know, whether it was the Beat It jacket from Swerve or Ospreay's new black and accents in green, as opposed to, you know, the flowered and boa jackets that he used to wear. There was another entrance gear nod in this match that I think went under the table. Not a lot of people really noticed it, but props to MJF for doing it. He came out in his Burberry print, but the accents were of a salmon and a teal color. So that actually was a tribute to the late Hana Kimura, who self-harmed, and that happened actually on May 23rd of 2020. So she unfortunately self-deleted on the 23rd of May. This show was on the 24th of May. So it was a great homage from MJF. Obviously, you know, say whatever you will about MJF, the character, and he always tries to stay in character at all times, but it's just the little things like that, where it's like, you know what? That guy fucking gets it. And
true professional,
absolute professional. Great job. Great nod by MJF. But, like what you were mentioning, let's look at the exact opposite side of the coin. Mm-hmm. And let's talk about Kevin Knight, that wow. son of a bitch.
That son of a bitch. Yeah, what a finish. I mean,
dude,
this is what was like to me, like the cherry on top of what yes. was a phenomenal, flavorful, wonderfully delicious Sunday that was this pay-per-view. Then yep. you get a like, wow, okay, you knew sooner or later Kevin Knight was going to turn.
It was going to happen. It was definitely going to happen.
Yeah, it was going to happen. Was it going to happen out of the blue at the end of this pay-per-view? I wouldn't have called that a million miles, but I knew it was going to probably happen soon. But for them to shoot this right at the end of the pay-per-view with a big cliffhanger effect, I thought was an excellent move by Tony yes. and the company to do this, because we were still in shock of what yes. had happened, you know? And it appeared that Darby was going to get yet possibly another beat down or something mm-hmm. on behalf of MJF. Kevin Knight comes out, and by the time he is up on top rope and about to do that splash, it just, oh my God, it took me a second though, because I was still oh, yeah. just taking inventory of what the fuck I just watched. And then here he comes and boom. And yep. it makes total sense.
Yes.
From what was last week in that storyline and the promo that Kevin Knight cut, it all makes sense. And that's yep. what I like to see.
Let us down.
Yeah. And I'm interested to see where they go with a variety of situations here. One, is he aligned with MJF? Two, where is Speedball Mike Bailey in the mix of all this? Three, how about Swerve? Remember yeah. Swerve kind of like planted some of these seeds in Kevin Knight in the yeah. first place, that he was above being another guy's tag team partner, that yeah. he had something more in him that he needed to realize. So where are they going to go with this is anybody's guess. I think first and foremost, we're going to see Mike Bailey and Kevin Knight in a nice feud for a couple months here to lead into All In, where probably it's going to be Kevin Knight and Darby Allin for that TNT championship. We'll see where they go, but that would be my guess on it. And like I said, if MJF and or Swerve is involved in the development of this guy's heel character, will be remain to be seen, but what a turn.
Yeah, dude. The thing is, the way that it was shot, I didn't think anything of it whatsoever until the one camera angle. I do yeah. wish that they wouldn't have spoiled it with that one camera angle.
Yeah.
But right before Kevin Knight jumps off the top,
yep.
they framed it perfectly, and you saw that the stretcher that Darby Allin was on, because oh yeah. I did skip over this image. Oh, yeah. This is another one of those amazing images, courtesy of AEW. After the match, Darby Allin gets put onto a stretcher. MJF stands over his broken carcass. And the stretcher gets wheeled, and it just so happens to be at a perfect angle to be able to take a splash.
For sure.
I wish I wouldn't have seen that camera angle. In any event, it still surprised me, because I had that stunning moment of realization right before, just like you did. And sure. just like I'd say 99% of people did, mm-hmm. where we're like, oh shit, this is fucking happening. Mm-hmm. And then it did. And yep. props to Kevin Knight, props to Tony Khan mm-hmm. for setting this into motion and building to this, because yeah. this has been something that they have been building for quite some time.
Yeah,
Kevin Knight has been he's gotten new gear as of late. Mm-hmm. He's been operating with a bit more of an edge lately. Mm-hmm. He's been a little bit more cocky as yes. opposed to just being confident.
Yes.
So I really want to see where we go from here. I think you're dead on about Speedball being in a feud with him for that TNT championship. Mm-hmm. I don't think Speedball goes over at all in the feud. Yeah, I think Kevin Knight maybe lays him out. And realistically, they do have that July pay-per-view that they've called Redemption, which mm-hmm. just so happens to be taking place in Canada. So everybody's been speculating, oh, well, is this going to be a Kenny Omega Redemption? Is this going to be, you know, Cage and Cope, whatever the situation was, I think that you might actually see Mike Bailey come back and have, if he doesn't take the title from him on that night, I think that they could have a crazy, crazy matchup. Yes. But ultimately, I really want to see where we go from here. But I think we know where we go from here, and that's the fun part.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah, this is a fresh turn with lots of possibilities, lots of directions you can go, lots of development, and I am excited for it one way or another. I'll tell you that much. I really am invested in this turn already. And it just, I tell you, this pay-per-view hit all the check marks.
Yes.
Fantastic in-ring. Fantastic main event, fantastic stadium stampede gimmick once again. Just flowed very well as a pay-per-view in general. And then to have even some angles coming out of it, including this one with Kevin Knight at the end. I just thought overall, like I said, this was one of the best, if not the best, AEW pay-per-views ever. I think a benchmark that you could compare it to would be All Out 2021, where you had similar structure. You had a lot of really good matches. You had a pretty solid main event, but then the post-match of All Out 2021 was what got people talking as how that show finished with Danielson and Adam Cole coming out. And similarly, coming out of this show, where were those fantastic in-ring across the board, then you come out of a big cliffhanger to end the show as well with Kevin Knight, what, you know, so it was, they filled the quota and then some on every level of this show.
So damn good. And, you know, speaking of filling the quota, let's turn to some news that came out of this show. And AEW, their attendance for Double or Nothing 2026 was 15,015.
Awesome.
So props to them for drawing in excess of 15,000. It was the second largest gate set from a non-WWE wrestling show in the United States. Obviously, All In Texas is going to hold that honor for being number one. But yeah, in this case, number two just goes to show a stellar, stellar build, because that was one thing that really did, you know, watching AEW from day one.
Yeah.
The one thing that I would have to say that was a needs improvement area was in the build for their major tent pole events.
Yes.
And I think they hit it out of the park with this event. They did everything the exact right way that they needed to do it. They established, hey, these matches are what we're building towards. And then you saw the feuds come together. And by the time this show went on the air, we all wanted to see those matches, and we had a justification for why we wanted to see those matches. So now that AEW is actually factoring that stuff in, it's going to be an amazing time and a really exciting time to not just be an AEW fan, but to be a professional wrestling fan in 2026.
No question. Yeah, they're in a different mode right now than I've seen them in quite some time. And it's really awesome to see the buzz, the energy in this show, the buzz coming out of this show.
Oh, yeah.
All in all, it was, I'm really excited to see where they go for Forbidden Door. I have high hopes for that with a lot of integration with all the other promotions that they're working with. I think there's going to be some creative matches abound. And then we have this new pay-per-view in July that they're building as well, which, like you said, could go in a variety of ways. Possibly Kenny Omega and MJF, maybe. That may be his possibility there for a main event for that one. And then, of course, we got All In, which is going to be where everything really culminates and where that goes. So we got a nice run coming up here for the summer for AEW. Really excited about it. And, here we go. Get your seatbelts buckled in, because this is going to be a wild ride.
Here we go. And elsewhere on the media scrum, Tony Khan confirmed the My AEW app is looking to become the hub for wrestling promotions worldwide.
Awesome.
So that's huge, man, especially in the wake of, you know, the documented issues that have been going on with Triller TV.
Yeah.
there needs to be something else to fill a vacancy if one arises. Right. And it looks like as if Tony is positioning my AEW to be that filler for the pro wrestling business, which is a very, very intelligent move.
Yeah, I love it.
And you got to love it, man. You got to love it.
There's more than enough connections that AEW has made with independent promotions across the country and the world that this could be a substantial amount of different promotions with their content on there. I'm excited about it. I am really looking forward to it.
Absolutely. And, speaking of independent promotions, they are already trialing putting other promotions on this service, mm-hmm. as QT Marshall's indie promotion that he runs out of Georgia, One Fall Wrestling, has episodes on my AEW currently. So you can watch One Fall Wrestling every week right there on my AEW. And if you haven't had a chance to mess around with the app, it is actually very cool. They have a My AEW Live channel, which is running 24/7 and has AEW programming from day one. Wow. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Love it.
You've got episodes of Dynamite all the way back from the very beginning, running constantly. And obviously they're going to be putting other shows on there as well. Yeah. So you'll see Rampages on there. You'll see Collisions on there, maybe even AEW Dark and Dark Elevation on there. Cool. But that's really cool. Not to mention, with my AEW, you get access to all of the Ring of Honor content.
Mm.
So you get it. It essentially is Honor Club as well. So you get all of that stuff. You get their pay-per-views. You get their weekly shows. And if you're outside of the U.S., you also, by joining my AEW, with a yearly membership, you get the pay-per-views with my AEW too. So for those of us who have been opining for the lost days of the WWE Network and the $9.99 and how fantastic it is, mm-hmm. they're trialing some really good stuff right now, because the rate for a yearly membership, which is all inclusive, all of the stuff from AEW and Ring of Honor and One Fall, and if they add other indies on there, is $120 bucks a year.
Jeez, that's,
you're looking at a price point of $10 a month.
Yeah, when you break that down, that's $10. Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, they're planning ahead. They're thinking ahead. I'm not sure what the future of Triller will be. I mean, we'll wait and see. They've been trying to get sold. They've been trying to get out of the hole that they're in. Time will tell. But that will leave a void. And I could see, you know, a GCW. Maybe shifting over tonight.
That would be a big shoe to fall.
It sure would be. Yeah. So we'll see where they go with it. But it's good to see that they're thinking about this, because there could be some landscape changes down the road in the streaming sides, depending on where things shake out. So
absolutely. And other things to come out of the media scrum. Yeah. You remember that Jurassic Express bus spot? Yeah. Well, police were called, notifications were sent out on the Citizen app when Jack Perry crashed the bus into Mark Davis and threw that golf cart.
Christ. Well, I mean, they fooled me for a second there. Yeah. Tony Schiavone sure fooled me.
Oh, dude. Tony was scared, man.
Yeah.
You could hear it in his voice. Like, that wasn't kayfabe. Like, he was legit scared.
Yeah, he legit thought that was what happened. And I was wondering, I mean, the way they filmed it, I mean, they broke away, they showed the bus coming towards him, but then you're like, whoa, wait a minute, whoa, wait, he hit that way too hard, what the fuck, you know, is he in there, what was going on? But thankfully everything's all right other than his eye, which time will tell on that, but wow.
Jeez,
fooled many people, including citizens.
Absolutely, man. And last but not least, to come out of this show, let's end this on a positive note.
Yeah, that's awesome.
AEW Fight for the Fallen 2026 is potentially going to be dedicated to ALS efforts following AEW roster member Rebel's diagnosis with ALS, terminal ALS. So first up, definitely like to send all of our love and best wishes to Rebel. Our hearts go out to you. and not a great situation, but she has the absolute best attitude of anybody who is in that situation. So it's she. This is not a great situation, but leave it to Tony Khan, AEW, to take a negative, spin it into a positive. Right. And I really would love to see those same people that love to dunk on AEW for one reason or another to dunk on them actually having a charity show.
Right. That's the profits are going to go directly to the fund. And I think is this usually like in June, July that they do this for a call? So it's coming up.
It's going to be an episode of like a Clash of the Champions type episode of Dynamite.
Yeah. I'm all for it. I think it's a great direction to take with it, given the fact that this is one of their, and she's been with AEW forever.
I don't want to say day one, but she was there in the first year for sure.
She was there. I think she was originally even like a makeup person or something along those lines, if I recall. And then she got mixed with Britt Baker and whatnot. But so she's been there for a really long time, and it's really heartfelt to see them take this direction. I think it shows a lot of class by the company, and they care about their own. He's very protective, and he will take care of anybody in his company. And this is just another example of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, just to sum up AEW Double or Nothing 2026, I got to say, this was one of the greatest AEW pay-per-views that I have ever seen. And I've seen every single one of them. I've been to definitely my share of them, as you have as well, Jed.
Yes, sir.
This was a fantastic show that I am going to revisit because it was that good.
Me too.
So good, man. And you know, from top to bottom, like I said at the beginning, everybody that was involved in this show brought it, from the in-ring talents to the production teams to the set design people. We didn't even talk about the way that the scaffolding looked with the lighting that they had in place. Absolutely. That was a really cool visual too.
Sure was. They didn't take a lot of room for the stage, but good, right? Yeah, I got more people in there, and it fit the motif that they were going for. It was like scaffolding in downtown New York City. You know,
I was gonna say, have you ever been to New York?
Yeah, if I recall,
everywhere.
We saw that around every corner in New York City, you know, so it fit the vibe. It was great. Yeah, just just top to bottom. I mean, everybody was in their A game, from production to staff, to commentators, to cameramen, to the workers, to the people behind the scenes, to the crowd. Everybody was at their best for this show. And, you know, I've mulled over, like I talked about, All Out 2021. I've thought also about All In last year and a handful of other shows. Maybe the first Forbidden Door that you and I were at as well. I felt like that was a great show.
Oh, yeah.
The first Double or Nothing that we were at as well. Legendary historic event. But this took the cake. Some could argue maybe top three. But I think, you know, either way you slice it, is it the best one of your pick? Or is it in that wheelhouse for the top two or top three? Whatever you may decide to land on with it, this was unquestionably one of AEW's better pay-per-views ever. And, legendary game-changer stuff. Like I said, right at the seventh-year anniversary of this company, how apropos, getting past that seven-year itch and taking it to another level, establishing themselves even further, and ain't nobody gonna say, I think even the haters of the haters of AEW could take a look at this show on some sort of level and find something here that they could not deny.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely agreed. Yeah. And you know, at the end of the day, you love to see it.
Yeah,
you love to see it. So, and as we've mentioned on this show before and on this network before, when the tide comes in, all boats rise. That's how it should be.
Yes.
And we're starting, I have a definite feeling, we're starting to see a bit of a groundswell around AEW. Mm-hmm. And as a result, we're going to see the tide roll in for not just AEW, but for a lot of independent promotions too, which that ties us directly in to what we're going to talk about. So obviously we're going to pivot just a slight bit. You're probably listening to this on either Monday night or Tuesday, whatever the situation is. Tuesday night, the Vegas Bad Boys podcast will be coming to you live for Wrestling Talk in the same place that you're hearing or seeing this right now. Let's just put that out there. And then later this week on Thursday, myself and Red Jed, we will be back with the Sin City Indie Report, where we talk about the ins and outs and everything that happened in this week of independent pro wrestling. So be looking for that. But before we get there, we got to wrap this show up tonight, Jed. So let's talk to the people and just give some final thoughts, tell them where they can follow you, all that kind of fun stuff.
Absolutely. Yep. Red Jed's Wrestling Rants. Just some variety of stuff that I have on the website, from entrances, match clips, high spots, this, that, and another thing in the world of wrestling. We've been dropping the Sin City Indie Report also on my channel as well. And looking forward to the collaborations in the future. I expect some different things maybe to come and cauldroned up and conjured up in the month of June for some more fun. And check it out. Red Jed's Wrestling Rants, Super Red Jed on YouTube.
Hell yeah, man. And I just want to say thank you to everybody for hanging out with us tonight. Thank you for liking, sharing, subscribing, doing all the stuff that you guys do. We appreciate each and every one of you. Also, a very special thank you to all the brave men and women serving this country, whether you're doing it on lands foreign or domestic. Thank you for doing what you do so that we can do what we love to do. And last but not least, repsports.com, repsports.com. Go there for all your pre-workout, weight loss, and general energy needs. Repsports.com. Use promo code Vegas at checkout. Save yourself 10%. Yes. Yeah, man. So there we go. We're done yet again. But it don't stop. That's the beauty of pro wrestling. It never stops. There's never an off season.
Oh, shit.
So, like I said, we will be back on Tuesday with the Vegas Bad Boys podcast. We will be back on Thursday with the Sin City Indie Report. And until then, we will see y'all next time.
Yeah.
Did any of you have a great time tonight?
Yeah. With that, everybody, thank you for hanging out. We will we'll do it all again next week. Till then, happy wrestling.
Rolling up the strip under neon lights. Podcast mic is glowing in the desert night. Matt and Michael's leading with the swagger tights. Sin City Steve right by his side. All right. Rob Butcher, Larry dropping truths, no fear. Broadcasting stories, make it loud and clear. From the Fremont edges to the Bellagio sphere. These bad boys rule, let me make that clear. Vegas bad boys, tearing up the scene.
To Matt Michaels and the Vegas Boys of Podcasting, this is John Cena saying thank you so much.